This front half of the room, there's still some empty spaces. It's an easy thing to just let go by you. But if you could compress to the middle, if you haven't done that already, if there's any seats, pretend like you absolutely love the people next to you and squish in. There's some people in the back that there's one person that's actually taped to the wall. And I just don't think that's, okay, that's not true. I'm trying to manipulate you. So if you guys could scoot in, there are a couple of seats up here. And trust me, they're the good ones. The ushers are going to come forward. If you came prepared to partner with what God is doing in and through this community, finances would be a large way that happens. So as the bag with handles is going by, that's just an expression of partnership with this community and entrusting things that matter to you to God. And we look forward to seeing what he'll do through our continued trust. Last summer, I had this interesting experience. I was walking across the parking lot here. It was a Monday afternoon. I was just getting some fresh air, get some perspective, thinking. I was kind of walking in the trails out back and stuff. And I look across the parking lot about 50 yards away, and I see a familiar shape. It's a turtle walking really slow. That's what they do. So, for me, if you know me, that's the mark of a good afternoon. I found an animal. I go up and I find that this turtle, it's an aquatic type of turtle, but he's in the parking lot, and so he's obviously caught between ponds. There are some ponds next, secular ponds next door, and then there's ours, and he was apparently having some kind of spiritual choice moment. So I picked the turtle up to kind of see what kind of turtle it is. And right away I noticed this thing is covered with leeches. Like wow. Every soft part of its body, not on the shell, but every soft part of the body, the neck and the legs, the tail, everything had leeches hanging off of it. And so I took it upon myself to do an exorcism. And I start pulling these leeches off, and I'm just throwing them in the parking lot because I don't save leeches from parking lots, just turtles. And I'm throwing them down, and I mean, there's a couple dozen leeches on this turtle. And so, the leeches are only about an inch long, but relative to the size of the turtle, if you can imagine having two dozen snake-sized bloodsuckers hanging off of you, I mean, this turtle had to be lightheaded at least, you know. So I get all these things off of the turtle. The turtle doesn't even say thank you. And I take it and I put it in our pond. So exorcism and a baptism that day. It was kind of a big day for me. But I realized once the turtle swims away in our pond that this whole time in the background, what I didn't realize was happening is I had a cloud of mosquitoes around my head. And I had been swatting and smacking, and I'm bald, so it's like easy money coming dive bombing straight down on top of me, on my neck and stuff. And because I was focused on this other thing, I didn't realize I was actually kind of annoyed. I had all these mosquitoes around. So I'm swatting and everything, and I just decided I'm out of here, and I go back inside. Later that night, I'm brushing my teeth, and I'm looking, and I can see these mosquito bites all over me. But I realize there's this other discomfort right up my belt line, and I pull my shirt up. You all right? My original plan was to make a mini movie about this. I'm glad I didn't do that. There's two ticks at my belt line. I'm looking, and I'm like, man, I love nature, but I hate it when it tries to get my insides out. And so I get these two ticks out of me, and I'm looking in the mirror, and so I've got these bites all over me, and now I've got two red marks where the ticks were right up my belt line. And then I realize there's a can and a special comb still on my sink, because 2 days prior, our kids came home with the elementary school equivalent of leprosy. They got lice. So before you put your kids in school, lice seems like, oh, how gross. But when it actually happens, you're like, I guess that sort of thing happens. There was only a couple of them on each of the girls' heads. And yes, that's me trying to control your thoughts about my house. Because, it wasn't the gross kind. There was four total. No big deal. And so the little comb that they give you and the special shampoo that we had used is on the corner of my sink. And so I was thinking about the turtle, the leeches, the mosquitoes, ticks, lice. And I just kind of had this, oh, man, I just want to go move to the city, right? And so then I remembered my wife had asked a question when we were de-licing our beautiful daughters. And it was one of those kind of serious questions, kind of not. And it started with, so, and that means, hey, preacher boy, she says, so how do we explain why God made these things and called the world good? And so, and you know, I prefer easy questions about capital punishment, the nature of the Trinity, these kinds of questions. These are, I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe Satan made, maybe it is Satan. I don't know why these things exist. So for a couple of days, I had tried to come up with sophisticated reasons, and they were creative, but they're probably wrong. But here's what I determined, that parasites do nothing less than serve us with a very real, tangible reminder of how loathsome it is to be an identity, a creature, that's primary purpose is to take. Yeah, it was that good. Very tangible reminder of how deeply and viscerally we hate beings whose persona is taker. And so we've been in this series for 8 weeks. And today, I want to look at the eighth commandment. You shall not steal. You shall not take. Lo tignav. It's the whole sentence in Hebrew. You will not steal. Now, it's an interesting statement because for the first couple of commandments, it was very specifically addressing your relationship with Yahweh, God's name, the great I am, the great self-existent, mysterious one. But it was specifically about him. Then it was about Sabbath, a specific day of the week. And then it was about honor, specifically your parents. And then it was about killing, which is obviously murder. We're talking about your people, brothers and sisters, other human beings. You don't do that. Then it's adultery, which obviously is specifically talking about a spousal relationship and what comes with that. Now, don't steal. Don't steal what? Don't steal from whom? And it's left wide open, completely unspecific. You will not steal. Steal what? Mm-hmm. From whom? When is it okay? Fascinating how unspecific this one is. Now you have to understand, these are people who had been slaves in Egypt their whole life. That's all they've ever known. But because of a covenant made with their forefather, Abraham, God, through Moses, takes them out through the Sea of Reeds. They're at the foot of Mount Sinai. The covenant is renewed. Here are all 613 commands, what you will do, what you will cease to do. The covenant, Torah, the guidance, the way, the enlightenment. This is what it means to be a people after God's own heart, to put his name on display, and to end up being the people who will bring about Messiah, that will reverse human history. History that will redeem human history. This is what it means. These people, though, have only ever known what it means to be a slave. They've only ever known what it means to be owned. And so these commandments are so often about don't think about yourself as property and don't do what a lot of people who have been slaves do. They either go right back to another exodus, right to need for another exodus. They'll go to another Egypt, or they'll enslave others because that's just how they understand the nature of relationships. Former slaves either go back into slavery or own them. And they don't even know that it's happened. It becomes so normal to them. So what I'm hoping what we will continue to do today, as we've done in weeks prior, is to look at these commands and not go, oh, I've heard that. Oh, that doesn't apply to me. I don't steal. I hope what we'll do is continue to think about Paul's assertion that the law isn't just a list of rules, it's spiritual. There's something transcendent about it. Any organized group of people can come up with a list of do's and don'ts. The law, Torah, is spiritual. This gets at our hearts. And so don't check out if you don't currently tiptoe around buildings with a funny French hat on. That's the picture I have. The stripes, the little mask. If that's not you, this is still for you. Thieves, there's something going on in their heart before stealing is ever expressed. That's what we have to embrace today. There's an attitude of being a taker that in many respects gets exercised, gets employed, allows the rest of us to see it by way of taking. And it's always justified. Because some of us might immediately go, well, is it ever okay? Because some people, man, they're in a really tough spot. And if they don't steal, their kids die or whatever. That's mercy asking a question. That's compassion. And our faith is certainly one that would never say, oh, no, principle over the person. Obviously, there are mitigating circumstances where some people, they really do believe, and it may actually be true. If I didn't take what wasn't mine, my kids would have died. So within our faith is a compassion and a mercy for exactly that kind of thing. But the problem is, no matter on what scale the stealing happens, it's always justified in the eyes of the thief. You very rarely get somebody who is of a sound mind that would say, I stole that just because I wanted to. What, for the thrill of it? Oh, no, I didn't get a thrill. I just saw it and I wanted it. We would say there's something broken then in their brain. It's always justified when a thief takes. And so the heart of a taker is always, it always has a self bias. They can only make a good, always make a good case for it. And so stealing isn't just the act of acquiring somebody else's property. Stealing is entitling yourself to somebody else's property, entitling yourself to something that doesn't belong to you, and then figuring out how you're going to get it. See, that sucks us all in. It's an entitlement issue. That's why it's justified later. I used to run with this guy named Roger, and a couple years before I started to run with him, he was a very different sort of person. Now, the way he would talk about himself historically, you could tell he was trying to close the gap between the monster and the good person that he felt like and wanted to be. But Roger was like a black belt in three different martial arts, and he used to mug people in the city. And so I remember talking to him about it one time, and probably a little self-righteously, and what he told me was, you don't understand how hard I trained and how hard I worked to be able to do that. And if you can't defend yourself, I've earned it. That's how I felt. Now, again, he was probably just trying to figure out a way to justify it, because we always have a self-confirming bias that we try to exercise. How do I make myself right? No one ever chooses to be the bad guy. But the question is, when you hear Roger say, oh, I've earned your money, I trained very hard to be able to take that from you. And if you can't defend yourself, then you've lost it. I've earned it. If you hear that and you think it's only the violent part of that that makes it evil, then you don't understand entitlement, because it's entitlement. It's not the violence that makes it evil. It's the entitlement that makes it so evil. When people steal, I worked with young people and frankly was one. The self-confirming bias, the justification for taking here. Well, they didn't even have to work for it. They were born into all that stuff. It's not like they're going to miss it. They'll never miss it. They're spoiled. Man, money just gets thrown at them. Stuff gets thrown at them. They don't have to do anything for it. It's not like they're going to miss it. Trust me, they've done their share of stealing. Does sound familiar? So that's the bias for self. We'll justify it. There's an attitude. I'm entitled to it. It's not my fault. It's somebody else's fault. That's the heart of a thief. But see, it doesn't have to be a person. And this is what maybe will reel us in a little better and help us to realize this is about us. It doesn't even have to be a person, because when a bunch of people come together and form an organization, that thing becomes something less than a person. And that thing can sin against you. I hate that company. I hate them. But you can't sin against it, because it's not a person. It's a business. It's an organization. And so some of us, this attitude of entitling ourselves to things that are not ours, it gets played out that way. Man, with as much money as that company makes, they're not going to miss mine. With as much business as I've done with them in the past, I think it's justified. I think they'll be all right. With as much business as I've gotten them, as much patronage, trust me, it's okay. I mean, technically, it's already mine. Those are already mine. With the tax dollars that I have spent, it's already my property. It's not like anybody's going to suffer. The little thing that I did compared to what they have and what they are, not even a blip on the radar. It's not my fault that they have employees that make mistakes. It's not my fault that their system has a hole in it. It's not my fault that their business has a blind spot. Why should I suffer for their error? Of course I'm keeping the money, the stuff, the excess, the fruits of their mistake. Why should I suffer? See, it becomes a thing, and you can't even sin against a thing. It's not even people anymore. But guess what? It's parasitic. It's stealing. But it's justified. It's always justified. You will not steal. Now, for most of us, when we talk about stealing things, the adults in the room say, yeah, I did that a couple times as a kid, or maybe I never did it, but I certainly don't do it now. I don't take things. We've got to be careful if we are exempting ourselves from the eighth commandment. Because we don't steal things, and yet many of us, we still have the heart of a taker. We still have the heart of a thief. We just recognize we're not willing to pay the price for actually exercising that in very overt ways, but we still have a parasitic, anxious, scared, who's going to take care of me if I don't? Heart. And so it can be intangible things, but it doesn't make it any less of a crime. It can be something that's not on the books for a particular nation or state, but it doesn't make it any less of a crime to what you actually are as a human being made in the image of God. When we fight our way into getting the accolades and the attention that somebody else is getting, well, if I become their friend, then the attention and love that they're getting will rub off on me. If I align myself with that successful person, I will then be, by default, successful. I will take from what they are earning. I will hitch my wagon to who they are. I will manipulate what they are so that I can get some of what they are receiving. We do this all the time. We do it with successful people. We do it with attractive people. We figure out ways to align our souls and our lives with them. But really what we're doing is we're trying to get our mandibles in without it stinging. You realize the reason you can't feel a tick biting you, it's not a gift. Thank you. That didn't even hurt. Who was it for? Don't want to get swatted. You better get good at it. When I try to get something from somebody else, the attention that they're getting, the respect or the honor that I want for myself so people will find me worth honor, worth their respect, with a taker's heart, I'm entitling myself to something that does not belong to me to use for my benefits, socially, psychologically, emotionally. When I'm trying to get credit for something that I didn't do, or I'm trying to make sure that somebody doesn't get all the credit because you know I was involved in that, and so I'm going to take my credit back. It's the heart of a taker. Or I'm not going to correct you. Since you think that I did that, since you think that's what I meant, since you think I was responsible for that, and you thinking that will benefit me, I won't correct it. Yeah, that's kind of a lie, right? Yes, I'm taking reality from you because it benefits me. It's the heart of a thief. It's a taker. When you take somebody's innocence or their purity or their dignity from them, when you're talking about them and they're not in the room, but you use them to stand on, to bolster your social position. Did you hear about, do you know about, I can't believe, why do they always, you're gossiping about somebody, that's theft. You are stealing from somebody to benefit yourself here. You're taking from someone's soul, from their story, and you're applying it in such a way that you can stand on it. You can furnish your life with it. It's the heart of a taker. And God says, you will not take. You will not steal. You are not a parasite. See, there is a way of allowing ourselves to see other people and treat them like obstacles. You have something that I want for myself. It can be something you can hold with your hand, or it's something you can put in your heart, but you have it and I want it. So the person no longer becomes an object of your love, of your compassion, of your patience, all those things. No, they become an obstacle. They become a receptacle of the thing that you are after. And so you can see why this is on a short list, do not steal, on a short list with don't murder. Because either way, the person's being simply becomes a thing to take from. They become a container for the thing that you want. They become an obstacle that's either in your way toward getting what you want, or an accessory that will help you get what you want. It's not about treating people like human beings or objects of love. They're hosts to nutrients that you've got to figure out how to get out of them. Lo tignav. I'm interested in this verbiage because the phrase applies to kidnapping. The exact same phrase. There are many Jewish scholars that have said for years and years and years that the eighth commandment literally reads, you will not kidnap. And before you think, okay, good. At least in one faith, I'm off the hook on that one. The issue is that when you see somebody as the receptacle of your stuff that you've entitled yourself to, kidnapping is simply moving the boundary out a little bit. Your stuff belongs to me. You're a thing in my way, or you're going to help me get what I need. And since you're a thing, I'm going to take you too. It's an extension of the exact same heart. You will not steal. It was about 3 weeks ago, I walked out on a Monday morning to get in my car, and my car door was open. And that would be just like me to do that the night before. So I didn't think much of it until I realized my other car in the driveway, that door was open and the dome light was on. And my stomach went into a twist. And I looked and I keep my wallet right underneath this little space under the radio, and it's gone. And before you start judging me, yes, I live in a cul-de-sac bubble in suburbia. I understand all of that. But nonetheless, I walk out and I feel what, if you've ever had this happen to you, the sense of violation. That somebody had broken into my car, and by break in, I mean they lifted the handle. And they went around the cul-de-sac and pulled on everybody's handle, and all the open cars got stuff taken out of them. Somebody's navigation system and all this. And I never got angry. I just was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. And really, it's more of an inconvenience. We are very blessed in our society that we have the companies we do business with. And they just really, really love to help us out in a time like that. But I'm thinking, I got to renew all the cards and the driver's licenses and the social security card. And you're not supposed to keep that in your wallet. Shut up. I know that now. I never got mad. I just felt like, oh, you got to be kidding me. And I knew it was just kids. And I'm not saying just kids, that's what kids do. But it was kids acting very immaturely. The coupon book, what do you call those things? The entertainment book, City Pass thing, the big thick thing. They left it. I was like, you stupid kids. That's a gold mine. Well, that doesn't seem to have any value, you know. They just left it there. I never got angry. But it was interesting to watch what happened in mine and my family's hearts in the subsequent days. Because I started seeing all my windows differently. And every time I got out of the car, I would lock it. And I would play through, this is why I need to lock it. And suddenly I looked at my house, and my house felt more vulnerable. Man, it wouldn't be really hard to get into any house, I guess. And I started to hear things at night, and I started to recognize, why is someone turning around in my cul-de-sac in a car I don't recognize at 11:30? And my wife said she went on a drive and through the neighborhood to go pick those kids up from school, and she saw two kids walking, and they looked like they were having a good time, but just she profiled them really quickly and said, you know what, I bet it was them. And she felt herself getting angry at two teenage boys that she didn't know, and she was like, holy cow, look at what's going on inside me. I said, I know, I get it, I totally get it. And then I had this realization. My garage door opener is in my car. All they had to do was push a button and they had access to everything I care about. And then I got angry. Because then I realized, well, why didn't they do it? Compassion? Nope. Why does the leech or the tick do what it does so stealthily? Compassion? No, it just knows its limits. Fear, survival. They didn't not come in my house because no, that's too, that would be unethical. They're scared. And see, what I realized is that it was on the same scale as kidnapping, especially when my son, and you can't hide the fact when you start Monday off with cops in your driveway dusting for prints. You can't explain that away for your kids. So we explained to him, somebody made a foolish, selfish choice. This is why, and I walked him through that whole thing. And so my son, for every couple of nights, he'd start crying and say, I don't want to be kidnapped. You would be so sad. I would be so sad if I didn't have you. We never used that word, but he recognized, why couldn't that happen? If somebody will bust into your car, why wouldn't they bust into your house? Why wouldn't they just take people? He had this inherent sense that those things are connected, that using people, taking property and people, all of that is connected. And it was very interesting to watch anxiety try to take root in my kid's life. Now, I'm not saying they're all messed up and we didn't make a big deal out of this, but what did my three children learn? Something that we've all learned. We live in a world where people are going to try to figure out how to get their mandibles in without you feeling it. And sometimes it'll be your physical property. You take 1,000 people who never sin against each other for 10 years, and at 10 years in one day, somebody decides, I'm going to take your salt shaker. It introduces a cancer. It introduces an anxiety. It introduces a suspicion. Who's trying to take from me? Are you saying this because you hope that I'll like you so you can get stuff from me? Are you complimenting me on this thing because ultimately what you want me to do is align with your interests? It creates a cancer, a relational cancer. A suspicion and anxiety. And suddenly we're all defending ourselves subtly from other people. Think how many things throughout your day-to-day life are based on trying not to be taken advantage of. You lock your car, you lock your house, you go into a store and there's a camera hanging from the ceiling watching you. There's passcodes, passwords, locks. Over and over and over in all these different ways trying to stave off being taken advantage of. Which means we're all slaves. And see, here's the thing. If you're anxious, we're talking about fear, suspicion, even just low level, I don't want to go too far. I'll be taken advantage of. When there's fear, you can't love. You can't love somebody you're scared of. The Bible says perfect love drives out fear, but they're mutually exclusive. You can't live in a society where you're always suspicious that somebody's trying to take from you. And really, in your heart, you're trying to figure out, how then will I take so that I don't get taken advantage of? How do I have power? Paul says something to a new church that's very, very helpful. It's very simple. It's very, very helpful. He says this in Ephesians chapter 4. Anybody that's been stealing must steal no longer. Now stop. That's a commandment. Don't steal. It's to faithful people. You will not, if you've been stealing, stop it. But remember, the issue isn't the command being followed. The issue is life. God always trying to draw us into life. If you've been stealing, you must steal no longer, but work. Doing something useful with your hands that you will have something to share with those in need. Your hands have been used parasitically. You look at the world as something to lay hold of, to take and to acquire and to get from, to manipulate. Sometimes it's tangible stuff, but sometimes it's the intangibles of somebody's insides that you're trying to get for yourself. If your hands take, you must take no more, but instead serve with them. Love with them. Do not take advantage of people, but instead love them, serve them. See, Paul's saying this to a church. He's saying this to faithful people. And he knows that this is not going to eradicate stealing. He's only talking to one group of people. Everybody else is going to continue to steal. Everybody else is going to continue to find ways to get inside your head to get from you what they want. He knows this doesn't eradicate stealing. He's talking to faithful people. And so this is what he is saying to them, what I believe he's saying to us. You got to go first. Oh, now wait a minute. You've got to assure me I'm not going to be taken advantage of. If I'm going to become the kind of person that refuses to take, that refuses to live parasitically, you've got to assure me that I'm not going to be at the same time being taken advantage of. I mean, who wants to put themselves in that kind of vulnerability? And Paul says, somebody's got to go first. Somebody has got to lead humanity out of parasitism. Do not take people's stuff. Don't take advantage of people. Don't participate in activities or businesses or make purchases that have the net effect of making it so that some people aren't being paid what they're due, that their dignity is being robbed. Don't just turn a blind eye to that. Don't be takers. Don't support an attitude of taker. Instead, use your hands to serve and to love. This isn't just a don't, it's a be transformed. Turn that energy away from yourself and be somebody that loves. You are not leeches, but you're going to have to go first. Somebody's got to go first. So what blocks us? Full court basketball going on back there? Is that in a speaker? I can't pretend like that's not happening. Hi. Okay. Can we tune that out? Here we go. Now it's got a rhythm to it. I'm going to wrap it out from here on out. This thing? Wow. I'll just bounce back from that. The ushers are going to come forward. What was I saying? I totally lost my place. What was I saying? Somebody just said, don't steal. See you next week. So the question really is then this. We're being invited to live differently. We're being invited to live in a completely different... We've got to do some really, really intense work on our insides to say, how do I see people? How do I see the world? Is it something to lay hold of? Is it something to get from? Am I a taker? We have to do some serious work, but we got to also ask, well, what is it that blocks me? Because nobody would look at what we've said thus far and say, oh no, that's a bunch of junk. I want to be a taker. I want to be more aligned with a tick than Jesus. What blocks us? And here's what blocks us. And this isn't going to sound profound. You've heard this before. Trust. It's always the issue. From the very beginning, it's been about trust. Not, can I get you to believe that there is a God? It's, can I get you to believe that he's worth being called Father? The issue isn't, is there a God? Yeah, probably made the universe, is interested in world peace and big lofty ideas. No. Can I get myself to embrace what Jesus teaches? That he's a father, very much interested in my day-to-day life. Here's what blocks us. And many of us, we don't realize this because we go to church, we read the Bible, all the things, all the check boxes we would check. Here's what we've got to realize. Many of us believe God is a thief. We sing to him with outstretched hands. We pray before and after meals. We can quote chapter and verse from the scriptures. But we subtly believe God is a big thief. He takes lives. He takes jobs. He takes money. He takes loved ones. He takes resource and momentum. He takes. But he's allowed to because he's holy. He's perfect. Can't even get mad about it. We carry the same anxiety, many of us, towards God that one carries towards a thief. That arbitrarily, God is going to lay his sights on something and go, that's going to look better in heaven. I'm going to take that. You're going to learn a lesson. And he just takes it. And so much of our faith is a systematic way of bolting the door and praying that Jesus will be our security system so that the great cosmic God doesn't decide he wants to take a good run of health or fortune or luck that I've been having. And then I'm supposed to try to read into it some kind of lesson and smile at church and just say, hey, Lord gives and takes away, right? But we carry an anxiety about God as a great thief. And many of us, we don't even realize it. We're scared to realize it. that might be our view of God. But just ask yourself, when things go really well for an extended period of time, kids are healthy, you feel good, job this and hobby this, and the vacation went off without a hitch, and on and on and on. And in your mind, you're going, this can't go for much longer. That suspicion that the great cosmic thief, who's justified because he's holy, he's never done anything wrong, he's going to come and take. Jesus speaks to this. In John chapter 10, verse 10, this is what he says. The thief, the mentality of the great taker. We're not talking, oh, he's talking about Satan. No, no, no. He's talking about thieves. He's talking about a mentality that primarily takes. He's talking about parasites. The thief comes to steal and to kill and to destroy. But I, Jesus, have come that they may have life and have it to the full, have it abundantly. I'm going to give you the best life you can imagine. Jesus comes pouring out. I want to give. I want to give. Everything I do is because I'm trying to point you toward life, away from all the parasitism that you have settled for, all these sophisticated ways that we've just embraced. Let's just be leeches. Let's just be ticks. Let's be mosquitoes. Let's figure out the best way to look at the world and figure out how to get it from other people and yet not break a rule or lose somebody's respect in the process. A very sophisticated way of being thieves. And sometimes we're talking about something tangible. But for us, most of us, it's something far deeper. It starts in the heart. And what we believe about God is the chief determiner of how we see the world. Whether or not I am a giver or a taker is rooted in my view of what God is like, what's actually at the center of the universe. Somebody that wants to arbitrarily take from me, or somebody that wants to love me regardless of what I get right or wrong. My view of that determines whether or not I'm chiefly a parasite or something more on par with what Jesus was like. That is the chief determiner of how we go about doing this. Will I live in fearful want, trying to manipulate my way into your stuff, into your head, into your heart? It all comes down to, do I see God as a thief or a father, a parasite or a shepherd? May we be bold enough to go first. Not so that we can steal people's respect and admiration for what a unique people we are. May we be bold enough to walk out of a parasitic taker's mentality. Be bold enough to believe that following Jesus may have its discomforts. Not may, will have its discomforts. Will have its unanswered questions. Will make you different. Will comparatively put you at odds with the acquisitions and the attachments that other people will have. May we be bold enough to follow Jesus anyway. And to take our hands literally and figuratively and be vessels of loving, of serving, and of giving, and refuse to take. Go in peace. We'll see you next week.